Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender. Today's episode is brought to you in part by HDI Intelligence, the first full-service analytics company to operate exclusively in the world of college basketball. Schedule smarter, prepare smarter, play smarter. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, please visit risingcoaches.com. All right, we have a special guest today all the way from Louisiana over at LSU Unis, the head coach, Byron Starks. Coach, how you doing today?
Doing fine, man. Just like you, we're pretty busy this time of the year trying to get our programs back up and running again. I know you're at a new location now, but it's still the same thing and probably just a different location for you.
Yeah, we always have our new challenges everywhere we are, and we're getting close to that school mark. So it's like turning the page on, you know, summer and our recruiting class and moving on to the next steps. But I know we're all excited and you guys just got started as well. But, yeah, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, Coach. Where did you get your start? You know, I know you played back in the day. I'm sure you still can play a little bit.
Well, a little bit.
So tell us your basketball journey, how you got to where you are.
So I grew up in Grambling, Louisiana. I'm not sure if many people know much about Grambling or where it is. Grambling State University was about a mile away from my house, walking distance. Went to high school at Grambling High School, played for a legendary coach there, Michael Lyons, who won 5 state championships. You know, we had over 50 Division I players. And, you know, one of our most notable players right now is Paul Millsap, who's in the NBA, done an outstanding and continue to do an outstanding job. Gerald Honeycutt, who played in the NBA for 3 years as well, was one of our first McDonald's All-Americans. Antonio Hudson played at LSU, and just a whole host of other guys. And I did not start playing, I would say, AAU basketball until I was like a junior in high school. Started traveling, got noticed by a lot of schools, ended up signing with the University of Louisiana, which then it was Southwestern Louisiana. Had a great career there, played all 4 seasons, went to the NCAA tournament twice. And we went to actually my sophomore year, we played Oklahoma in that first round. Then went on in the second round, played New Mexico State and barely lost that game. You know, we should have been in the Sweet 16 that year, which was okay. It was a bittersweet moment because it was a milestone for the university. And as a matter of fact, they hadn't gone that far in 30 years. So, you know, we're still one of the classes that kind of made an impact at the university. And of course, from there, I had an opportunity to train with the Miami Heat, Utah Jazz, played in the USBL at that time, United States Basketball League with the Memphis Fire, and then had a little stint overseas before I got into what I'm doing now, which is, you know, coaching and mentoring young men.
Awesome. So you were, after you got done playing, you were a high school head coach right away? Yes. You were an assistant for a while?
I was a high school head coach. Marty Fletcher was my college coach, who offered me an opportunity to become an assistant under him. I elected not to do that. I took a small high school job here in Lafayette, because I wanted to be involved in my kids' life. And I know coaching keeps you away from your family, is very busy within itself. And let alone if I had gotten into the college game that early, I think the cycle that I had in my life likely would not have been broken, and I would have continued to do the same thing. So I wanted to raise my boys, took a little small job at Assembly Christian School, taking a pay of, I think it was like $13,000 at that time. And they gave me a $4,000 stipend to teach a class. I enjoyed every moment of it because it gave me an opportunity to just learn from the ground up, you know, and I appreciate the opportunities that I've had in coaching, because most of them and all of them have actually been building programs, you know, in particular when I started at Assembly Christian School here in Lafayette. We would practice outside. We had to find different gyms to go to practice. And our school still had a level of success. We were in the private school league, eventually grew into the Louisiana High School Association League. And from that on, I went to Northside Christian School in Crowley. And I came to Lafayette Christian Academy, And from Lafayette Christian Academy, I went on to LSU Eunice. That was a stop where I made at the University of Louisiana. I was an assistant for 1 year as an assistant coach. But, you know, in terms of my head coaching stints, those are all the schools I've been to.
Yeah, quite the journey that you've been on. And you mentioned something that I think is really cool when you talked about the timing in college athletics, where it takes away from being a father. And you've raised some good kids, but tell us about, I know your son played for you, I think 1 year or 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. He played with me 1 year.
One and done with that. That was
one and done, man. But you know, I coached him throughout his well, from the time he came out of the womb all the way up through high school. Then he had a 1 year stint at Northwestern State. Then he came and played for me. But we won a state championship together in high school at Lafayette Christian Academy. So it was really good. I think it was real cool to be able to coach your own children. I coached all three of my boys throughout high school. And it was one of the things that I would say was a notch in my belt. Not only did they, just have good basketball experiences, but they become great men. All three of them graduated from college. So I think I've done my job and continuing to do my job.
That's awesome. Yeah. What's it like to coach your son or sons, I guess?
It's a challenge. I can tell you that, because you have to separate, you know, the what you do in the gym, game time, and then you have to be father son at home. And I've always made sure that, I didn't want them to feel awkward. I didn't want them to have any special attention on the court, because that, you know, I treated all the guys on my team like they were my own children. But my sons knew that if they were going to play on the court, they had to earn that. And I think they respected that. You know, they worked extremely hard for me, and we won a lot of games together and a lot of nights. You know, my most famous coach is my wife. She's my assistant. She knows more basketball than I do. You know, believe it or not, she wins every tournament in the NCAA every year. She's been doing it.
We might have to put you as the assistant and her the head coach after that.
Well, yeah, she's just here. She's just not on the bench with me. Y'all just don't know it.
Sounds good. At LSU Eunice, so, you know, I got to know you. I think we became head coaches at the same time. And
yeah,
it's been one of your first games when we played each other a while back, competing. And you've always done a really good job, and you've always had a unique roster, and you've built that program minimal to done a really good job. So, running the table in Louisiana the last couple of years. So tell us a little bit about some of your rosters. So you've been able to build some teams, and you've done a very good job of always having a few international kids. So talk to us a little bit about, you played overseas. What's it like to coach a group of people, not only from Louisiana, but when you're bringing guys from other countries in?
Well, you know, I guess on the philosophy of coaching, we kind of look at it like the NBA, where you have your lottery picks, your draft picks, and your free agents. And I kind of look at it with the budget that we have, like it's not extremely huge, so we have to make our money work. So I felt like implementing internationals into our program would help us get some guys with length, because when you have guys with length, and especially in Louisiana, you know how it is in your area. Everybody jumps on those guys. So it gives me an opportunity to make connections with through mutual contacts. My former teammate, Kevin Brooks, who is from Australia. Actually, he's not from Australia. He's from the United States, but he lives in Australia. And he's now a full-blown Aussie, so he's going to stay there in that country. But I went there to visit him about 3 years ago, and we made a real strong connection. So I recruited a couple of guys from him. And one in particular last year, which was really good for us, Magat Manyang. And I like their style of play, because with the 24-second clock, they know how to play fast. Most of them are playing club ball, so they understand playing against older individuals. And also with the concepts, you know, the NBA has the spacing concepts. We use a lot of that, but the international game kind of mirrors college ball a whole lot more. So we utilize that in the way that we play. So that's why I recruit a couple of those guys. And when you merge the two together between the Americans and the internationals, you know, we're dribble happy here in America. They're pass happy. And when you merge the two together, it just become, I would say, a great marriage. And by the time the season begins, or at least by midway through, I think we rub off on the internationals, the internationals rub off on us, and we become one big happy family.
That's awesome. And you've done a good job with it. So it's been good. And I followed your motto a little bit. So I went after a lot of international bigs at my new place. I think I have seven bigs on the roster, and six of those are international. So
that's awesome. That's a good thing. You know, I said we're in the middle of a rice field in Unity. So I said in the middle of the rice field, we have all types of individuals. And I said it just makes for good community, good conversation. You know, in this area, it's a lot of French culture. So I've had a couple of guys from France as well. And it's amazing to see how they interact with the people here in South Louisiana. And I've had, have some from New Zealand, Austria, Africa. So yeah, I think it's just a good mixture, man. I love it.
Yeah, you said a couple of important words here, and your couple of phrases was community, and you said family. Mm-hmm. And I know you're big on family. You talked about that beginning, and developing young men. So talk to us a little bit about some of your philosophies that you have within that. I know you've developed a few programs. You've sent me some cool videos and different things in the past, and we've had a lot of conversations about, just the wholesome person rather than just basketball this, basketball that. So talk to us a little bit about some of those philosophies, how you implement them within your program and community and some other stuff that you do on the side, because, basketball is taking you through a lot of things, but it hasn't been who you necessarily are. You're more than that.
Correct. So, years ago, I started an organization called Champions International, and it started with my basketball camps. From there, it grew into a public school outreach, and we started a program called Building Better Boys. And I thought that was fitting, one, because I coach boys, and also because of my children. I have three sons, and we started a program based off of mentoring, building, and establishing relationships. It was an intrinsic and extrinsic motivational type program where I got a chance to go on the campus and mentor kids one time per week. From there, we added a basketball program as well, Building Better Boys. So we took kids and travel different parts of our state. We would go as far as Texas and Florida. And those concepts have stuck with me because I know that in this world today, we need the presence of strong young men, strong leaders. And our concepts that we teach with our basketball program stems from the way I raised my own children, by being respectful, taking care of your responsibilities, being on time, and just being productive citizens in the world. And the same message that I give to my kids are the same message that I give to the guys that are in my program. It's no different.
That's really sweet. And, we need more people like that as we are in our business. It's not always the greatest business, but it's good profession if we do it the right way.
No doubt.
You always joke about how you're an older guy, and you joke at times. What lessons have taken you the longest to learn, and how have you kind of implemented those within your program?
Well, I have a high degree of patience, but for me, the longest lesson is just getting to understand how people think. How we can make sure we get the absolute best out of them. And I've learned a short circuit that I don't know if you've read the book Five Love Languages, which is extremely good. So I use those concepts even in my practices, or basically with my team every year. We do the survey, and it helps me get to better understand the type of individuals that I'm coaching. And I did the test with my wife some years ago. And it worked on her, I know her love language, which is acts of service. I can tell her I love her all I want, but if I don't, take out the trash or maybe change the light bulb, it doesn't mean a hill of beans. And I found those same concepts work extremely well with the people that I work with. So being able to understand people's gift, what makes them move or tick, so to say, was initially a challenge. But once I figured that out, treat a human life like a human life, it's been smooth sailing.
That's it's unique. And it's what's funny is, so I taught a coaching psychology, sports psychology class this summer at my new institution. And that was one of our days we talked about love languages, mm-hmm. words of affirmation, need to be told you're good all the time type thing.
There you go.
Time with you. Like that's a version of it. The obviously the physical touch, like you said, wife acts of service, and then, you know, receiving things, you just want things. And that's,
That's right. That's right. You know, it was amazing to me. A lot of my guys' love language was quality time. And it made me realize, you know, the time that I would, you know, call guys into the office or just maybe talk with them in the hallway or go to the cafeteria or maybe, you know, meet them in between classes, you know, that to them is like two thumbs up. And the guys with the, you know, we try to do a lot of touches within our practices as well. So you'll find the ones who like the physical touch, if it's a fist bump, you know, a pat on the back or just a, you know, just say, hey, man, look, let's get it going, and you give them a thumbs up and they're ready to go, you know. So
that's cool that you acknowledge it and you talk about it, and you know, I think sometimes you got to be in touch with that as well. You know, it is obviously unique situations and stuff, but yeah, you got to have that tough love too, and you know, that's part of it. Do you have anything else that you do that would maybe be unique or what other people may think is weird that you've done in your programs or that's just different?
Well, I would say we started a program last season, Six Figure Habits, and we had a couple of guys come into our practice late. So instead of me fussing or getting my blood pressure up high, I said, okay, how many of you guys want to make six figures one day? Of course, everybody raised their hand. How many of you guys want to play professional ball, whether it's in the NBA or overseas? Of course, 100% of those hands go up. So, okay, we're going to start a program. So we had, of course, 20 guys in our program, and we broke them down into different teams. We had four groups of five. And I gave each of them an imaginary $100,000 within their group. And if anybody was late, they got a $10,000 fine. So those two guys that were late and they were in the same group, their team was docked 20 grand right off the bat. So they had 80 grand to work with. Now you could add money to it as well by your behavior. If somebody on campus said something good about them, if they, you know, went to class contingently, even through our practices. So that's been pretty good and beneficial for us. We did it for about 6 weeks. I thought the guys embraced it. And at the end of that 6 weeks, the team that had the most money, we do what's called our payout. So the ones who had the most money, of course, they didn't get any of the consequence. So we had a first, second, third, and fourth place team. Second place consequences wasn't as difficult. Then the third and the fourth place teams, they had a lot of back pay, so to say, whether that was through our sprinting concepts. We do the 16s or put them on a ladder, and they did all those a lot of running. It was a lot of running. So it kind of let them see that, hey, if I put in the work, I'm going to get some positive results out of it. And in the midst of that, you know, we had the program going. Some of those guys who had the fines early on, we traded them to another team. So some of the guys like, man, why is he coming to my team? Well, you know, in the NBA, at any moment, you can get traded. So it took some of the money away from one team, and it gave another team a little bit more income when I switched them over, because your money goes with you. And by the end of it, one of the guys, in particular, one of the guys who did not do as well early on, he was traded onto the team. He didn't have to do any other work because he was on the winning team. And it was a great opportunity for me to teach them about grace. You know, sometimes we don't always get what we deserve. But in this case, they learned some camaraderie. They learned to work together, because if one of us fall, then all of us fall. And that was the end result. So I felt like that was a good concept within our practices. We're doing it again this year as well. And we're just incorporating a whole lot of other things with it. And we have a sheet that we go by, so they know when they're being deducted points, or they know how to add money as well.
That's really cool concept. I've never heard that before. Where did you come up with it on your own? Did you get it from somewhere, or where did you come up with the general idea and concepts?
I came up with it on my own because I knew I needed something, you know, that would connect with the kids that I have in my program, and money talks. So, you know, again, I would put different videos together that I would send to them in our group chat. And they would see the progression, because we kept a spreadsheet. So when I would send out the spreadsheet each week, they knew exactly how much money they had in their accounts. And you could see it in the group chat at times. You know, they are either cheering one another on, or somebody would say, hey, come on, man, we got to get it together. You know, we're losing money. And it was just a good, tangible way to kind of, you know, hold them accountable, number one. And most important, they held each other accountable. So I thought it was a pretty fun way to do it.
Yeah, that's really sweet. Did you do anything with you or your staff to kind of participate in a way, or were you more so like the banker?
I was the banker and everything. You know, I'm not really good with math myself, so I put it in a spreadsheet and let that calculate everything. But we were, you know, my assistant coach, Jake, you know, he was very good at times, just, you know, encouraging guys. So he would send the messages, you know, hey, we have this meeting at such and such time, take care of your responsibility. Hashtag six figure habits. So they always understood, you know, what that meant.
Cool. You haven't taken an unconventional route. So to, you know, have been a high school coach and then jump to college when you had a chance to be in college and did some Division I stuff and then played, and you've kind of done a lot of different things and had success doing it. What would you tell to younger coaches, you know, that are listening to the podcast, and, you know, in terms, it's a Rising Coaches podcast, but it delivers to a lot of people with the lessons that we teach and talk about. What would you tell the young guys getting into the profession or people that want to have a long, sustained career in coaching?
Well, always bloom where you're planted. My mom passed away about 8 years ago. And on her casket, I took the emblem off. Each of us had a chance. I have three brothers, so each of us had an opportunity to select one of those. And the one I selected was, may the work I have done speak for me. I don't always look for the accolades of people patting me on the back or saying a lot of good things about me. I always like to do my work in the dark. It was the type of player that I was. I did not read the newspaper at the end of the game. As a matter of fact, I would say some 20 years after me being in high school, I went back and just looked at some of the articles, and you read some of those things. It you know, you hear what people say about you, and you realize, like, you know, I was pretty decent, you know, back then, but I never looked at it in that way. I never looked at the stat sheet at the end of the game. So the same way that I played the game is the same way I coach the game. Of course, we have to look at certain things in terms of analytics to figure out how we can improve our team. But I've always tried to, you know, put in the work, do the simple concepts, and just absolutely, you know, do things because you're dealing with human lives, you know, do things that will help people get better. And most times people perform better when they feel good about themselves. Yes, you have to have some discipline in that process. And yes, you will have to get on the kid, but we can always be demanding without being demeaning. And if most people know me, you know, I'm not a yeller, shouter. I'm not cussing my kids out up and down the floor. We'll have a good, solid conversation and, you know, just be who you are. Most important, you know, don't try to be, because my high school coach was totally different. Now, he's a Hall of Famer. I admire him a whole lot. And I watched the way that he carried himself and how he conducted his practices, how he ran his program. And I took some of those concepts and put it into my own flavor, or my own personality, and just utilized those same winning concepts, you know. And when I took a job, when I told you I was at Northside Christian School, I actually scheduled a game against my high school coach. They beat us by 102 points, Brian. 102 points. And it taught me a great lesson. One, know who you're scheduling. And the second thing, your team had better be ready when you step on the court. So that allowed me to say, you know, every time my guys step on the court, whether we win or lose the game, we need to be ready. And sometimes if you're not bringing it, I mean, we played against your team and you beat us, what, three times, four times? And I always look at it this way. Early on in the years, and I think we've had this conversation before, I've always told my guys, finishing is better than starting. And that's the most important thing, even in our long journey of coaching from, you say, September or October all the way through March. And all through our high school and even in college, we always went from August through March. So I tell my guys, I'm a March player. And I'm a March coach, so let's get on board.
I like that. I may have to steal that. March player, baby. You speak very deep in detail of, you know, you get a sense of humility in your life, and your perspective is very, you know, just refreshing. What would you say the best thing that could happen in your life right now?
Well, I always say when you treat a human life like a human life, you're always going to be rewarded. For years, I've always been a part of programs that have either started from the ground up, and most of those calls have come from individuals who would say, can you help us? And I always feel like when you serve others, doors begin to open for you. And I just look at it as if God is saying, hey, this is what you've been called to do on this earth. Do your calling, fulfill it, and I'll take care of the rest. And I've always made sure that I, you know, my mom would probably come from the grave and spank me if I did not do right by people. And I think that's one of the things that I've tried to, you know, carry in my life. And, you know, I hung out with nerds in high school. And, you know, I was a pretty good basketball player, and most people probably would think I was hanging out with all of the studs and those kind of things. I've always made sure I surrounded myself with people who had good intentions and who was going somewhere. So I've told my children the same thing. We are leaders and not followers. And if you do follow somebody, make sure you follow a good leader.
That's special. We say a similar thing, like build leaders, not followers. It's important in your whole concept of teaching, and you know, you're doing a great job with it. Is there anything else that, you know, any other questions I probably should have asked you that I haven't, you know, within the podcast, or something else you want to touch on? You've done a really good job and you're giving us some really good insight. Is there anything else that you know, feel passionately about, or questions I should ask that I haven't?
You know, I'd probably put my head on the pillow tonight and maybe think of something, but, you know, I just think in terms of a comment and what you all are doing with Rising Coaches, I think it's phenomenal, because this program and this podcast has helped me grow in my game, you know, with the guests that you have on your show. I think it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago I was introduced to Rising Podcast. I mean, the Rising Coaches podcast, and it has helped me tremendously. So I would just say, you know, just from my side, and comment and keep doing what you're doing, because you're helping a whole lot of people. And there are a number of podcasts that I do listen to. I've subscribed here as well. I think this is one of my top one and favorite ones.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate you being on today, and appreciate your insight, and keep doing big things. Keep impacting and changing, you know, people's lives. And, like, you know, you spoke two things on your mom, and I think that the humility part of it, and make your work speak for itself, you know, like,
yeah.
And that's what you've done with your life, and you continue to do. You're going to have another great season, and we'll see what happens next for you and your career and your family, and excited about it.
No doubt. Well, we got a lot of good kids on the campus this year. You know, it's just like building a new business every year in junior college. So we need to put the pieces together and see how quickly it can come together, and hopefully it'll last to the end.
There you go. Beat up on Mississippi for us.
Well, we've been trying to do that for a good while now, so we're coming. We're coming.
There you go. Well, I appreciate your time tonight, and look forward to seeing you throughout the year.
Yes, sir. Have a good one, Brian.
Thanks.